The Southern New Mexico Suffrage Alliance recently held a webinar titled Voter Expression, Not Voter Suppression. Secretary of State Maggie Toulouse Oliver had this to say.
Election officials ourselves are having our lives threatened on a daily basis around this country. It's not just me receiving a death threat or other secretaries of state or local election officials. This behavior is a death threat to our democracy that we need to be extremely cognizant of and to fight back strongly against.
What are the greatest threats to our democracy? We'll discuss with Doñana County Clerk Dr. Amanda Lopez-Askin, NAACP Doñana County President Dr. Bobby Green, and co-president of the League of Women Voters of Southern New Mexico, Eileen Van Wee. And your questions are welcome. 575-646-2212 to take part in Voice of the Public. We'll get started right after NPR News on KRWG Public Media. Good afternoon. It's 106. This is Casey Counts. Thank you for joining us for Voice of the Public on KRWG Public Media. I am joined today by some of the members of the Southern New Mexico Suffrage Alliance to discuss the webinar held last weekend called Voter Expression, Not Suppression. We'll talk about what some of the speakers had to say in terms of the threats facing our democracy and how to protect it. First, welcome Dr. Eileen Van Wee, co-president of the League of Women Voters of Southern New Mexico. Welcome to KRWG.
Thank you very much for having me, Casey.
We're so glad to have you, as are we glad to have Dr. Bobby Green, the president of the NAACP of Doñana County. Welcome back, Dr. Green. Good to see you.
Casey, it is always wonderful to spend time with you, and thank you so much for having us today.
And we have Dr. Amanda Lopez-Askin, our Doñana County Clerk, with us today as well. Hi, Amanda.
Hey.
I hope we've got a good connection there. We did our due diligence in testing beforehand, but we didn't hear.
No, we did. You did fine, Casey. It was me being very brief and just saying hello. So thank you for having me as well. I appreciate you.
Welcome back. And 575-646-2212, the telephone number to call. If you have a question or comment today along the way, we would love to hear from you. So please take part in Voice of the Public here on KRWG Public Media. And Amanda, I'd like to start with you. We heard the Secretary of State, Maggie Toulouse Oliver, during the webinar on Saturday, mention the atmosphere that elections officials are working in, probably more difficult than ever before. Let's discuss a little bit about what kind of efforts are underway to protect our elections officials while they're doing their very important jobs.
Sure. Thanks for the question, Casey. So we were informed that there was a special meeting with the Department of Justice, as well as the FBI, connected to threats across the country to election officials like myself and our Secretary of State, Maggie Toulouse Oliver. So that in itself is unprecedented, to convene a group of election officials across the country where they express a concern about our safety, obviously is something that has never happened before. Additionally, some of the items that they talked about was, A, I will tell you that they expressed very deep support for election officials and the work that they do. And that's always great to hear, right? Because it's a whole other level of accountability. And then they talked about some of the steps that they were going to take, including really starting some groups regionally, nationally, that are going to be monitoring it, updating us. It's going to be a concentrated effort to really get an idea of the scope of the threats. And so I think that in itself was something that we weren't surprised about. It's unfortunate, but as 2020 told me, there were things that I never thought that could happen, and here we are. So that was something that I know is near and dear to Maggie Toulouse Oliver's heart, our Secretary of State, because she personally, frankly, probably got dealt quite a few things that were shocking. And of course, locally, I had my own battles to wage as well.
Indeed. And Dr. Green, you were the moderator for the webinar on Saturday called Voter Expression, Not Voter Suppression. What were some of the main takeaways for you?
Thank you for that question. It was an extremely powerful event, and there was even more, it resonated more with me than I expected it to. The first thing was that Krista Slayton pointed out that our event was held on the 58th anniversary of the Martin Luther King, I Have a Dream speech, which of course is, you know, the most famous, one of the most famous speeches ever recited by anyone. And it was also the celebration of the 101st anniversary of the 19th Amendment. So it was there was reason to celebrate, but there's also so much work to be done. There's 400 laws that have been enacted in 49 states to suppress the vote, although 25 states have tried to expand voting rights too. So there's, you know, the other side, the good and the bad. That was, I found very interesting. Also, the Native American women who came and spoke to us, Jessica Martinez and Ariana Fierro, were extremely knowledgeable, and they had so much useful history that we don't even think about. The fact that some of the laws have such inflammatory language in them even now with regard to Native Americans, that resonates with me because my great-grandmother was Native American. So, you know, my ancestry is very, very entrenched in both African-American and Native American. Both of those groups are, you know, at risk and targeted right now for suppressing the votes. I think Jessica mentioned the fact that Native Americans, sometimes they don't have an actual street address, which makes it difficult for them to receive absentee ballots and even to register to vote, and things that people don't really think about. So I found that very interesting. And then the LULAC CEO, Cindy Benavides, talked about the fact that she had met the day before with President Derek Johnson, who's the president of the national president of the NAACP. And they're working together on legislation to combat some of these voter suppression laws that are happening around the country. I believe that the law that was passed in Texas just yesterday, the day before, banning abortions after 6 weeks for pregnant women, I believe that's an act of voter suppression as well. And so there's a lot of subtle things that are happening that are going to make it difficult specifically for women. And we better be smart and know who we're voting for when we vote, because it is, you know, it is a matter of life and death right now.
575-646-2212 to ask your question. Doñana County Clerk, Dr. Amanda Lopez-Askin, NAACP Doñana County President, Dr. Bobby Green, and Dr. Eileen Van Wee, who is the co-president of the League of Women Voters of Southern New Mexico. Dr. Van Wee, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Southern New Mexico Suffrage Alliance, how it came about and why it was important to hold this type of webinar?
Thank you for that question, Casey. Back in 2019, several groups of nonpartisan organizations came together because we wanted to celebrate the 100th anniversary of women getting the right to vote. And we had a wonderful event in February of 2020, and we planned to have another one in late August, close to August 26th, which is Women's Equality Day, and the date that actually the 19th Amendment went into the Constitution. Because of COVID, we couldn't do that. But we got back together, and let me just say who some of the organizations are that are in the alliance now. It changed a little bit, but we had the American Association of University Women. We obviously had the NAACP. We had the League of Women Voters of Southern New Mexico. We had LULAC, the League of United Latin American Citizens, and the Greater Federation of Women's Club, the Progress Club, and of course, the County Clerk's Office. And as we talked about an event close to August 26th this year, we decided that something was more important, even though the right for women to vote is important. There was a lot of voter suppression going on. And we had a sort of a long conversation about what the theme should be and how we might focus it. And we decided after lots of conversation that we wanted to address interrupting voter suppression, but we also wanted to focus on expanding voter rights.
And in what way do we feel like voter rights need to be expanded?
Well, there are always things that we can do. And I think Amanda was talking earlier about some legislation that was we were hoping to get passed last year because of the pandemic. We had more rights established for voters than we do now because they were thinking that the pandemic wasn't influential, I guess, this year. But for example, having automatic ballots sent to us, all registered voters having all of their ballots automatically sent to them, that would be a good expansion.
Obviously something that people are suspicious of in terms of mail-in ballots. Dr. Lopez-Askin, talk a little bit about, you know, where that comes from and what the reality is of mail-in ballots.
Sure, and I think what Eileen is referring to is there was a bill that came up specifically connected to having a permanent absentee list. And there was a lot of specificity in it connected to who would be able to have it. So, for example, Casey, if you knew moving forward the rest of your life that you wanted to vote via mail, you would be given the option to get on that list and you would receive a ballot automatically if you were on that list. However, you would have to meet a certain amount of criteria. There would have to be areas that were verified. You would have had to the addresses would have to be correct. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into the verification on the front end then to be able to allow send you that absentee ballot. And I believe that is what Eileen is referring to. That was something that came out. Other states have an automatic, what we call a permanent absentee or mail list. So that was something that was up and was actually very supported. It just didn't quite make the clock. You know, the time ran out among other voting legislation. And the reality is that absentee voting by mail is a very secure way to vote. There is a process. Somebody currently in New Mexico has to apply for an absentee ballot when and in that application they are affirming under a fourth degree felony that they are the individual that is indicated in the application. Additionally, that heads to our office and is verified through our system in terms of that voter's identity, the signature, all the information. And if, there's any discrepancies, then the voter is notified and then they have to either correct it or they do not get an absentee ballot. So that's the first thing. I think there's this idea that we automatically send ballots to everyone, but that's just not the case. And the idea that there's not an identification process on the front end that goes through to the actual receiving a ballot is incorrect.
Dr. Green, you mentioned something a moment ago about some Native Americans who don't necessarily, and that wouldn't just be Native Americans, but quite a few people who might not use have a home address to register to vote with or use it on a regular basis. One of the laws passed in Texas during the regular session that went into place today requires you not to be able to use a P.O. box in order to register to vote. Who is disenfranchised by that law?
Well, the one important thing to keep in mind is that homelessness is on the rise. And one of the speakers talked about a homeless woman. I think it was you, Amanda, who talked about a homeless woman who didn't have an address and wanted to, has always voted, but did not have an address. And the homelessness, of course, is on the rise. So it's a problem to require people to have an address when they don't have an address. Or, for example, when I was a kid, my address was 5 miles north of Las Cruces. That was the address, official address in my school records for all of my life because I was born and raised on a farm 5 miles north of Las Cruces. That was the address. That was what everybody, you know, used. And so my family would have been excluded from voting had that been the case. And then it's just only, I think it's exacerbated by some of the shenanigans that happened with the post office itself. They were removing the voting machines and cutting the hours for workers. So even people that could mail in their ballots were in jeopardy of them not getting to the registrar on time because of what was happening behind the scenes with the post office. So it's a big problem, and it is mostly impacting people of color, not just African-American people, but Native American people, Latino people, immigrants. It's affecting a lot of people, the bulk of, and then the issue of people who are incarcerated. Which address are you using? They're trying to use the address of where they are incarcerated as opposed to the address where they live or where they were originally from before they were incarcerated. So there's all kinds of things that are stacking the deck against people of color, and systematically, they said before, with surgical precision, trying to reduce the opportunities or eliminate the opportunities for people of color to vote, because, as I said in the webinar last week, they are afraid. They know that if people vote, there are certain groups that are not going to win. And so rather than impress or express or allow people to, to try to vote, they think that it's a better approach to suppress the vote, and that they think will be a winning strategy. It's been the same for how many years? Since 1776, there's been certain groups in charge and certain groups who've had the right to vote and certain groups who fought for the right to vote. John Lewis and the John Lewis Voting Act is a direct result of people trying to vote. And, we all know that infamous picture of him on the bridge being beaten and almost killed by police officers simply because he was marching for the right to vote. So this is not new, but it's more important now, I think, at least in my lifetime, I believe. I'm sure that, my ancestors thought it was critical as well. But it's just, we've got to come up with a permanent solution and not just kick the can down the road.
And Dr. Lopez-Askin, while we were talking about that Texas law, you were shaking your head. And what impact, obviously that's Texas, that's not New Mexico, but what impact, if that were to happen here, what impact would your office see because of it?
Well, I will tell you, if you're talking specifically connected to the Native American law connected to whether they have an address, in Doñana County, it wouldn't be as much of an impact as it would be in other parts of our state, and it would frankly be devastating. Our state, the indigenous people in our state, the idea that they would not have the right to vote when there has been so much stripped away from them already is outrageous, and everybody should be upset about that, right? Not a party affiliation, not connected to where we stand politically, but everybody should be outraged that that could happen to our Native American communities. Additionally, we're very fortunate in New Mexico, but it doesn't mean that we don't have a bigger fight against us. In New Mexico, Casey, we do amazing work in elections. And I can tell you all of the things that we do, including things like if you live on the corner of Briarwood and Piñon and you are at a white house with a black fence, you can put that in your voter registration and we will find you. You have a right to vote. And I did talk about a woman who had been hit homeless recently, and her absentee ballot was kicked back for various verification reasons connected to her address. And I didn't think she was going to join the hearing that we had that took place that, again, our New Mexico election code allows for. And she was able to appeal the decision and was able to provide the information necessary. And that woman who was struggling with homelessness, who was in her 60s, who has always voted, was able to vote because people in New Mexico care about this issue. And we have legislators every single day that are working towards making sure that we maintain and move forward connected to our elections. We have a bigger fight ahead of us. And when you talk about what the great equalizer would be, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act would be the number one thing that I can think of currently.
Dr. Van Wee, I'd like for you to touch on the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. And obviously there was a dramatic, 38-day period when Democrats left the Texas legislature, went to Washington, D.C., broke quorum, and basically went to lobby Congress to pass this act. Do you think they were influential there? And what are its chances moving forward?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer, Casey. But I do think that there is a possibility of getting that passed. And I think the Texas legislators who went to Washington, D.C. were also looking at the For the People Act, which would be a broad-based act that would really provide protection for all of these other voter suppression acts that are being legislated. But the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act would bring back the Voting Rights Act of 1965 in a more positive way, so that some of these states, it's specific to certain states that would have to come before the federal government and make claims about the laws that they are passing and why they're doing that before they are passed. And so I think it would restore the Voting Rights Act possibilities. And we'll hope that that can get through the Senate. But I guess I would encourage listeners to contact our senators. And another part of that would be to ask them to eliminate the filibuster, because that would help get that vote passed.
Obviously, Dr. Green, the history of the filibuster, here it feels like maybe we're coming full circle in a way. How important do you think it is that the filibuster is addressed?
Well, it strikes me, and I found it very frustrating that very few people talk about it now, but Obamacare was, if I'm not mistaken, it was filibustered 55 times before it actually passed. And it was through the brilliant work of our Speaker Nancy Pelosi that it finally did pass. And now people are, you know, embracing it. They understand the importance of healthcare, and it shouldn't have been a debate in the first place. But the filibuster was the reason that it took so long for people to get health care who should have had it and needed it, and, you know, pre-existing conditions and all those things. So the filibuster is just a trick that can be used by elected officials that's being used right now to keep things that are popular with the citizens, gun control, for example, and voting rights. All of those things we are all impacted by those things. But the filibuster is preventing those things from moving forward because we have such a close margin in the Senate and the House. And so voting and making sure that the margin is not as close as it is right now, I think it's a 50-50 split right now. We need more legislators that will not try to ignore the rights and the will of the people and to get rid of that filibuster, because it's all it is just a roadblock, a way to prevent common sense legislation that everybody, 90% of the country thinks that gun control is important. But yet it's sitting and it's in limbo, and probably if it goes forward, it will be filibustered. So it's just a big problem, and it's a safety problem.
575-646-2212, the telephone number. If you'd like to weigh in today on Voice of the Public, Dr. Bobby Green, the president of the NAACP of Doñana County, is with us today, as well as Dr. Eileen Van Wee, who is co-president of the League of Women Voters of Southern New Mexico, and Doñana clerk Dr. Amanda Lopez Askin. And I wanted to get back to you now. Another portion of that law in Texas would give more power to poll watchers. I know that poll watchers have been in the news here in New Mexico, and in fact have been in the news right here in Doñana County in recent years. What is the danger of that? What does it mean, really, and what would voters expect in Texas, per se, in your opinion, with this new law? What powers are they being given?
So, to be clear, there are challengers, there are watchers, and there are observers. Challengers are there during partisan elections. Actually, they all are, but specifically connected to this local election coming up, there will not be challengers. There'll be observers and watchers should they choose to observe the process again, because that's a nonpartisan election. The challenges that we have with challengers, I think, is that there's not as much guidance, I think, in terms of behavior and what's acceptable. And it'd be nice to be able to have more specificity in the law that would really inform inform challengers what they were and were not allowed to do. I think 2020 highlighted a lot of, it was just a hard, really difficult year for everyone. And in elections, imagine in trying to run two separate elections within that year. And emotions were high. Every polling place, and many people felt strongly that they had to do certain things at locations that were not appropriate. And, you know, it's never ideal. We never want to make any kind of news for anything other than the great job that we do. But we had to, you know, we were forced to do things like make sure that our election officials, our poll officials, could work in an environment that was conducive and did not stop the process of our absentee voting. And so anytime anybody verbally accosts or does anything that is concerning, it needs to be addressed. It needs to be addressed immediately. And those are my concerns moving forward in Texas. Unfortunately, it's become so politically driven and motivated by certain things that really just to me are take away from the whole process for everyone. And it causes a lot of more rift and anger that is necessary. You know, democracy, being able to participate in an election, whether you're a challenger, a watcher, an observer, is a great thing. I actually think challengers, watchers, and observers make the process better. We welcome challengers, watchers, and observers. The more eyes on an election, the better it is for everyone. We just have to really figure out a space in which I think legally in which they can operate and what they are allowed to do in terms of their behavior and things that you know, perceived or real, however it is, behavior that can be concerning.
Let's talk a little bit, Dr. Van Wee, about the environment in New Mexico and whether there is voter suppression in this state.
Well, I think what Maggie and Amanda have talked about as far as the threats to election officials is definitely voter suppression. And I believe that there were a couple of individual voters that demanded a recount, and the elections were not even close. And to me, that was a matter of voter suppression, because it was intended to cast doubt on the election process. And so I think we cannot be complacent in our state. We have to be active participants in our democracy. And so I that is one of the strong messages that I want the audience to come away with, is that it is really important to be civically active so that we can preserve our democratic principles.
Let's, before any more time gets behind us, let's let folks know where they can find the webinar, Voter Expression, Not Voter Suppression, to go back and watch.
Well, it's if you go to YouTube and search Voter Expression, Not Voter Suppression, you will find it there. And if others are interested in having a direct link, why you can contact the League of Women Voters through our website. We have an email address there.
All right, very well. Dr. Green, let's talk about the diversity of the groups that were present during the webinar, and also that you would suggest are necessary in order to work together to support and protect democracy.
Well, one of the goals of the webinar was to unify diverse groups, because while we know their strength in numbers, and at this time, a quote that I like to say from time to time is that we may have come over on different ships, but we're all in the same boat now. And so it is time for us to get together, people of color from all walks of life and all generations. We really need to get together because we're the groups that are impacted the most. I really enjoyed the diversity of this alliance. We've been a member for quite a while, and I think there has been a good effort to make sure that it was inclusive. And I really like that inclusivity, the Native American inclusion. The LULAC was there. The NAACP was there. The Association of University Women was there. It is just the conglomeration of diverse groups of brilliant women, actually. And so when when women get together, it's amazing what we can accomplish. If you think about the 1920 suffrage movement, back when women weren't allowed to vote, weren't allowed to own property, weren't allowed to really speak, you know, husbands had to tell them what they could and could not do and how they could dress and all of those things. And women put their foot down and said, no, we're not going to put up with this. And they brought about the 19th Amendment. So we have the power to make a change. And we bring all of these different perspectives and all these beautiful women from different walks of life. There's nothing that we cannot accomplish. So I am thrilled and proud of the women, proud of what has been accomplished with the Suffrage Alliance already. And I expect great things. I think there is no stopping us.
Well, we'll find out what's next for the Alliance in just a moment. 575-646-2212. And Alicia is on the line. Good afternoon, Alicia. Thank you for calling Voice of the Public. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. I'm a native New Mexican, but live in Texas. And so don't hate me for that. Just kidding. I really do appreciate what this alliance is doing and hope we can find that in Texas where I live. But I do want to say it's just horrific when the laws that have been passed in Texas, people on both border, and, you know, give people guns without licenses, by all means. Let them holster a gun and walk around town, but let's restrict their people's voting rights. Let's not let people vote. And, you know, this is not going to get any better until people, like you were saying, women can step up. We've made a lot of changes in this world through all, you know, suffrage and everything else. So you're absolutely right. Hopefully we can find that kind of ground in Texas with women, and I hope to be part of that. So thank you.
Well, thanks for the call, Alicia. I know you you referred to some of the other. It was a very active legislative session in Texas, that's for sure. Dr. Lopez Askin, what do you think legislatively is important for the future in New Mexico?
Thank you for that question, Casey. We're always looking ahead. So what we are hoping, and I can say for myself, I'm one of 33 clerks across the state. We do have the second largest county in New Mexico. So, you know, I'm looking out for my voters, but also my state, you know, as a whole. So I think the permanent absentee voter list is something that would be ideal for those who, especially, you know, again, those who are young or old or more rural, who know they want to vote, you know, via mail, and they have to fill out an application every time now. And so some people say, well, that's not a big deal. They should do that. Well, I agree. But if we can remove barriers for eligible voters who have been verified, why wouldn't we want to do that? Right. Another thing that was a very, very large voter bill that ended up being hundreds of pages long. But in 2020, we made some provisions for absentee, again, mail voting, in which we adjusted dates. It's not realistic for a voter to submit an application on a Thursday. An application on a Thursday for a mail-in voter, for a mail-in ballot, when Tuesday's election day. It sets everybody up to be frustrated. And so we basically moved that back 10 days. So it was much more realistic, connected to the mail system. We also, you know, had the last four digits of the Social Security on as a verifier on the absentee, and that made the process go quite a bit faster, and it felt very secure. So those are some of the things that we hope move forward that I'm kind of eyeing. You know, we could think pie in the sky things like maybe making Election Day a state holiday. You know, those are things that I would support definitely. We could think about some of the things that, you know, Dr. Green talked about, as well as, you know, really looking at some of the laws we have, making it easier for felons, especially who have, you know, completed everything they needed to do. The reality reality is that if you have, if you are, your voting rights are restored, the data, the research tells me that you're much less likely to slide back. You're much more likely to feel more a part of your society and feel like you're present and accounted for and can only benefit everyone if your debt is paid to society and you're able to move forward and vote, that we should do what we can in terms of bureaucracy to make that easier. There's a lot of barriers in that currently. So those are some of the things that I have. I would also, there's something that, you know, is moving forward, hopefully, called the Voter Education Task Force. Casey, I don't know if you heard this specifically on the webinar, but I talked about New Mexico ranking in the top 10 in election administration for the MIT Election Index Scale. We don't talk about that enough. We're on a lot of lists that we don't like in terms of where we're ranked, right? Education, child welfare, animal abuse, et cetera. But what I do know is that in election administration with this nonpartisan academic Ivy League school, right, is known for their work, that we are ranked number 9 because of all of the checks and balances we have in elections, the security, all of the pro-voter things we do, like online voter registration. We need to work on voter participation, and we're hoping that same-day voter registration moves forward into fully on into election day. So a lot of young people kind of want to vote on election day. They get excited, and then they're not able to. So we're hoping that those who have all of those, again, you know, ID requirements and all the things that we have in place to verify identity, that they're able to vote. So those are some of the things, and I'm sure that more will pop up.
Well, and while we're on the topic of young people who get excited to vote on election day, I think that Dr. Van Wee, maybe you can address this. Too many young people aren't excited to vote, aren't part of the process. And I'm wondering what you're seeing in terms of the newest generation of voters and their level of participation and what you think is necessary in order to bring them to the table.
Well, thank you for that question. The League of Women Voters of Southern New Mexico has an active youth engagement project and committee working and working with high school students as well as trying to work with some university students. And I guess what we're finding is that the interest from young people in the last election greatly improved. And so we're hoping that that will continue on in this coming election. And I think what is most effective in recruiting them is for their peers to talk to them about it. And there is an active student organization at NMSU that has, with this last election, did a great job with that. And I know that Amanda and Lindsay did some recruiting of folks up there as far as elections go, but as well as being election workers as well. And so we hope that that trend will continue in our state.
575-646-2212 is the telephone number to call if you have a question or a comment today for Voice of the Public from KRWG Public Media. Thank you so much for joining us. However you're joining us today, you can call in your question or comment, or you can participate on social media. We're on Facebook Live, and you can leave a comment or question there in the comment section if you prefer. If you're streaming us from anywhere all around the world, thank you. We're so glad you can join us that way. There are a lot of different ways for you to take in the programming these days. And Dr. Green, I'd like for you to address that topic as well in terms of youth participation. You know, there are a lot of segments of the population, obviously, that aren't participating. So maybe not even just limited to youth, but people who are just apathetic or even feel disenfranchised. How do you bring them back in?
Well, I received from the NAACP access to the Voter Action Network database. And I ran a query because we were, our primary focus was to get out young voters. And so I ran the query of people who were 18 to 29 who did not vote, who voted in the presidential election, but did not vote in the midterm election. And I pulled up 140,000 young people with contact information, and we divvied those records up and started reaching out to them. They don't answer the phone, but they do respond to text and social media and things like that. So we recruited some young people to reach those young people to see if, you know, are you planning to vote in this election? You know, is there something we can do to help you? Do you have all the information you need? Are you planning to vote by the way, and things like that? Just a little simple reaching out to these young kids made a big difference because it did increase the outcome, and it increased the voter turnout. And so we plan to do more of that. We've got NMSU who's working with us. We've got the Martin Luther King Commission, the Office of African American Affairs. We are all working together to try to make sure that we don't let these young voters slip through the cracks, and that they know when, you know, what, how they can vote and when they can vote and where they can vote, because it's just important. That group is the future, and we need for them to reach out. You know, I've had mock elections in my classes for the last, oh God, 3 to 4 presidential elections. And it's amazing how close, how accurate those election results are in my classroom to the real results, the final results of the real elections. So these kids, they're pretty savvy. They know what's going on, but sometimes they're preoccupied and they're busy and they've got priorities, and making it difficult for them to vote is not the way to reach them. We want to make it easier for them to vote. We want to make it cool and attractive for them to vote. And it's starting to become that way. And I think that's, it's appealing now, and it's hip. So I think it's a good, the direction that we're going in with the kids is a good one. So we're going to keep that momentum going.
Go ahead.
I just have a quick, so we talk about voter suppression, and I know I'm looking at the screen, right? And so there's 5 of us here, and I bet you all 5 of us have voted pretty much our entire lifetimes. So the voter misinformation, the malinformation that comes out is not necessarily directed at us. It's directed at those who are on the fence about voting. It's directed at those who have never felt invited to the process or the table. It's directed at those that are young, that are old, that are poor, that are rural, that are gay. So it's directed for people who historically have not voted, right? So that is the importance of voter education continually, because we don't want those people to feel like there's something wrong with our system, that inherently there is, because there is not. There is not. And so that's why it's so great that you have focused on this topic, Casey. You know, I know we've talked several times and you're always wanting to get great information to your listeners, and we greatly appreciate it, because we have to combat voter misinformation and malinformation anytime we can.
I think it's coming into people's mailboxes at their homes.
Yeah, agreed.
Dr. Lopez Askin, I'm glad you jumped on that topic. It was actually next on my list, but I also wanted to touch on the upcoming election, and we're going to be looking at ranked choice voting again, right, for city council and for the school board election. Give us your impression of how it worked in the last mayoral election. There were certainly plenty of complaints about it, but what do you find moving forward, its value?
So first, let me tell you that ranked choice voting is only for the City of Las Cruces municipality. The City of Las Cruces City Council are the ones that made the decision to enact ranked choice voting just within their election. So there's 3 city council races that are up. And so far as of this week, 2 of them are going to be ranked choice voting. One has 4 candidates. And then we had another write-in candidate as of this past Tuesday. So that other race will then be converted to a ranked choice voting. So ranked choice voting, again, the first time we had it in New Mexico was 2019. And I will tell you, I always say this, my first election in 2018 was pretty high profile for various reasons. We had then ranked choice voting the first time we had the regular local election. And then we had 2 subsequent elections in a pandemic. So I'm really hoping for like an averagely stressful election versus kind of some of the really kind of the bigger things we've been dealing with. But ranked choice voting, actually, if you look at some of the data, I'm very data driven. Right. Thank you, New Mexico State, for that nice PhD. And what I did learn was that when there was exit polling that was done of voters, is that more voters understood it that we gave them credit for. More voters liked the idea that they could vote for more than one candidate and that they wouldn't have to come back if there was a runoff election. So, you know, I know that is what the data tells me. Now, that's not to say that there weren't people who felt that it was there's something wrong with it, that they just didn't like it, they didn't trust it. And I always say, I have to validate your concerns, because if you're concerned about the process, we're on the same page. If you're invested in it and you want things to be great. But what I also tell these folks, if you just want to vote for one person, and vote what I call classic, feel free to do so. Nothing should keep you from the ballot box, especially concerned about ranked choice voting. So keep that in mind. If you want to vote for just one candidate, you can do just that and move on. Recognize that if your candidate does not make it through that next round, that you have forfeited your right to vote in the subsequent runoff, so to speak. But we want you to show up, and your candidate may win at the end of the day. And so you'd want to, you know, definitely make your presence known. Election day is November 2nd. Early voting starts, I want to say it's October the 5th. Eileen's been looking at these dates, so she could probably even correct me. I've looked at like way too many dates. But, you know, we're excited. We know that voters have contacted us quite a bit for information. If you're looking at work in an election, we would love to have you. Please head to dacelections.com. Our new website has a host of great information, including a specific portal for election officials. You know, election officials were the unsung heroes of the 2020 election because they showed up for their community to make sure that we were able to run our election successfully.
One more administrative question before we move on with our last 10 minutes here. You mentioned signatures earlier, and I know that, you know, I have a friend who had to go validate her signature. And so these things are being looked at. How often should someone come and make sure that their signature on file matches the way that they I feel like I sign my name different every single time. What should people do?
So, you know, they're welcome to do it at any given time. If they want to come in and fill out a new voter registration to replace the old one, that's fine too. You know, we do confirm that there is a, you know, a signature and that you've provided other identifying information, and all those in combination lead us to, you know, confirm your identity as a voter if you choose to vote absentee. So, you know, also head to nmvote.org. Make sure all of your information is up to date. There were some voters during the primary who were not happy because they were not able to vote because they had inadvertently registered as independents, or what we describe as you know, they don't necessarily choose a party decline to state, sorry. And so I would encourage anyone to head over to nmvote.org to make sure all of their information is up to date. That is, like, I call it the mothership of basically voting information. It's a great hub, and there's a lot of great information on the Secretary of State's website, and we have links to it all over dacelections.com.
Dr. Van Wee, should we have open primaries?
Well, the State League of Women Voters has actually taken a position on that, and we do support open primaries. I think one important reason to do that is that, especially with young people and younger voters, they're not so interested in getting involved in party politics. And so we would probably get more of those folks voting in a primary if it was open to everyone. And so I think it's controversial. There are pros and cons, I think, to having an open one versus closed one. But the league does support the open primary.
And I mentioned quite a few minutes ago now that we'd get back to kind of the future and the next steps for the Southern New Mexico Suffrage Alliance. So what's next for that group?
Well, we had a meeting this week, and, you know, we didn't have plans beyond this event as an alliance. But as Bobby implied, working together with these diverse groups has been so successful. When we bring diversity together, we can provide really wonderful programming. And so I think at this point, we're hoping that we will reorganize in April or May so that we can figure out another program for the coming election in 2022.
And 575.
And we do have candidates forums coming up in October.
I want to get to that in just a bit.
Yeah, I want to get to that too.
Okay, great. Okay. 575-646-2212, the telephone number to call if you want to jump in here in just the last few minutes. That's the way it works pretty frequently. Don't wait too long. Call now with your question if you would like to join the conversation today with Dr. Amanda Lopez-Askin, the Doñana County Clerk, Dr. Bobby Green, the president of the NAACP of Doñana County, and Dr. Eileen Van Wee, who is co-president of the League of Women Voters of Southern New Mexico. I've finally gotten to where I can say all of that without tripping up along the way. I think I finally had enough practice at it. Okay, so Dr. Green, would you like to touch on the candidate forums?
Well, it's important to know what the candidates are all about. One of the things that happened in this webinar is there was a discussion about making sure that you're voting your own interests, and that includes knowing the records of these people who are running for office, what they believe, what they feel, and what they will endorse. And so these candidate forums are an opportunity for the public to provide questions, to submit questions that can then be asked of the candidates, and they get to speak on those questions. And it's enlightening. And I think it's a great way, Dr. Lopez-Eskin was talking about voter education. And the candidates' forums is one of the best ways you get it straight from the horse's mouth, what they believe and what they have campaigned on. And so I look forward to the candidates' forums. I like to ask the hard questions and see if they will, what the answers are. And so we have several of them coming up in October. Eileen has been very, very diligent in scheduling these forums, and I look forward to participating as well.
Do you have some supplemental?
Yes, I would like to add to that. The league is very happy about partnering with KRWG-TV and Fred Martino because the candidate forums will be on public TV. And the first one will be shown on his Newsmakers program on Thursday, September 9th. At 7 o'clock, and it's repeated on Saturday at 5 o'clock, and again on Sunday at 11 o'clock. And that first election or forum will be for District 1 school boards. And so then for the following 6 weeks, at that time on Thursdays and Saturdays and Sundays, keep an eye out for those forums. And of course, the League of Women Voters is very interested in you getting to know the voters. And that was one thing that did come out in the webinar as well, is several candidates or several speakers spoke about getting to know who you're voting for. And the League of Women Voters also publishes a printed voter's guide, which will be coming out on October 8th in the bulletin in English, and the Spanish version through Camino Real Media will be coming out about that same time. We also have an online guide, and it has other voter information as well, called vote411.org. And information, our local voters' guides should be available on that vote411.org website early in October. So that early voting does start on October 5th. As Amanda was suggesting. And so you'll want to get yourself educated about the candidates that are up for election.
All right. If anyone has can understand what election officials have been through lately, it's probably school board officials. So they've been having a rough time of it. Bill is on the line at 575-646-2212. Good afternoon, Bill. Hopefully we can get your question answered within the last couple of minutes here. Go ahead.
Sure. It's a late question. I've certainly listened to the program. One of my greatest concerns right now is the rupture that I feel in our nation between the two dominant political parties. And much of that is fueled by this recurring argument that the election was taken away from ex-President Trump. And I wonder what's being done to assure the transparency and the legality. I want to break up the conspiracy theories that it's all rigged. Can anybody speak to that?
Bill, this is Amanda. So what I can tell you is I don't have an answer. I can tell you that I wish I did, that every day I battle individuals who, when I've given them absolute proof, have explained the process, have gone through the checks and balances, and I believe is pretty definitive, they will still refer me to a random YouTube video, an article that's not been vetted and is very, very extreme. And it is every day really deeply saddening that we have gotten to this point. I couldn't agree with you more in terms of the big lie is exactly what it is. It's a big lie, and it's affecting our relationships. It's affecting our families in ways that are just heartbreaking. And I know I've lost several members of my family because of the fact that I'm an election official. And it is something that, you know, I hope that we actively work on every day. Hopefully you seeing me here today, if you're somebody who does not believe that our elections are true and have integrity. I am born and raised in this community. I'm a three-time Aggie. I'm a mom to a five-year-old. I'm a proud wife of a retired law enforcement officer. I've done everything I can in my community to better it. All my life has been dedicated to public service, and I run elections. And you know, I don't know what else I can do except humanize myself, humanize other election officials, show you all the checks and balances we have, encourage you to become involved in terms of being a challenger, watcher, and observer, become an election official, join groups like the League, and really learn from other election officials. And nonpartisan academic resources are also great because they have no a desire other than to give you facts and data. So if anybody else has any answers, I'd be also interested in hearing that.
Well, I would just like to comment on what Maggie Toulouse-Oliver referred to at our webinar. When she talked about if we see things online that we know are not true, to seek out, search out the truth if we don't have it randomly at our disposal, and make some corrections, call people on that, and just really put out correct information.
Chip away, chip away. Well, everyone, we are just about out of time. Bill, thank you for your call. And Dr. Amanda Lopez-Askin, Doniana Clerk, County Clerk, thank you for being here with us today. Dr. Bobby Green, NAACP, Doniana County President, thank you.
Always a pleasure.
And Dr. Eileen Van Wee, thank you so much for your time today of the League of Women Voters of Southern New Mexico.
Thank you very much, Casey, for including this important subject.
All right, it's Intermezzo by request coming up next with Leora Zeitlin, now NPR News.